Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina.
Acknowledge me.
And as always, I'm joined by my buddy Scott Chu. What's going on there, Scott? How are you?
I'm pretty good, man. Just turned 36 last weekend. So sorry, everyone. We didn't have a show.
Happy birthday.
Joe, you told me he'd be out, and I spent my birthday doing birthday stuff. Didn't get around to getting the show, but I'm feeling good. And the babies fell asleep, and it only took like 20 minutes today. Ooh. So everything's coming up, Scott, right now.
Oh, well, green lights ahead, right?
For this exact moment, yes.
All right, good. Well, let's take advantage of that. So we're just about at the halfway mark, Scott, of the baseball season. And there's been a lot of talk, about the decline in offense, basically. So I just took a quick look. And I guess the numbers, they're slightly off, but not by too much. So I'm looking... Same time last year in 2023, you had the league had a .248 batting average and a .409 slug and a .317 wOBA. And for 2024, the league batting average is 6 points lower, .242. Slug is .393, so that's, 16 points lower? And wOBA is down 7. wOBA is... .310 in 2024. Another thing I just took a look at, stolen base attempts. They're seem to be slightly up, but just about, not really that much of a difference, though. But this time last year, 2,230 stolen base attempts. This year, 2,322 stolen base attempts. And it's just about the same amount of games. It's just off by about almost 30, but is there anything that you've noticed different about this season compared to last, and any adjustments that you've had to make so far this year or plan to do, moving forward?
Yeah, and this is fun. This came up with Tout Wars as well. They sort of do this tout board and we all kind of throw our ideas in. Two things really stood out to me as I was doing that research. Number one is that 2003, don't think that every year is the same.
2023,
like it probably ought to be. Yeah. 2023 versus 2022, right? Mm-hmm. Like the league OPS was up 60 points in 2023 over 2022 on fly balls, right? I'm kind of looking at this from a fly ball perspective. When we talk about, the common theory is always like they've done something with the ball. The biggest thing that will happen when you change the ball is fly balls will have different outcomes, right? Because fly balls that don't leave the park are pretty much always outs. You know what I mean? So like they rarely do anything but leave the yard. And so when you look at fly balls, in 2021, the OPS on fly balls league-wide, .952, right? In 2022, .862. Right? 90 point drop. Mm-hmm. You go to 2023, it goes up 58 points to .920. This season, it goes way down. Now we're down to .827, right? OPS on fly balls. So what does that mean? Could it be that they're playing with the ball? Possibly, right? It is a fairly large sample size. We're talking about 23,934 plate appearances that end with the fly ball.
By the way, I've kind of given into the fact that I think MLB does play with the balls.
And so the question then becomes like, what do we do about it? Right. First we can say that 2024 is actually quite similar to 2022. Those 2 years appear to be in a pretty close amount of variance in terms of like league wide ISO and all that stuff. Whereas 2021 and 2023 were a lot more favorable to fly balls. So am I doing anything with it? The answer is not much, right? I think the one thing I've been trying to look out for are players who really succeed, overwhelming fly ball hitters who succeeded specifically in 2023, right? Like the one that hurts the most is Spencer Torkelson. Spencer Torkelson is a guy who doesn't necessarily pull fly balls that much. He hits them to all fields. A ton of them and a lot of them left the yard, and then they just stopped doing that, right? So Torkelson didn't have a problem where he was hitting too many ground balls, he was doing anything like that. His fly balls just weren't leaving the yard. Now, some of that, like, you can't blame the ball all for that, right? But with the ball being a little more maybe dead in the air, it makes it that much harder for him to go to that next level. He's going to feel every bit of that, you know, 60-point OPS drop that we're seeing on these fly balls, right? So I'm kind of looking at players who spiked power last year kind of out of nowhere with a new, maybe slightly more discerning eye, because home runs are almost always fly balls. Another guy that comes to mind who's maybe been okay, but is someone who I'm really kind of thinking isn't going to go back to those power numbers, J.P. Crawford. J.P. Crawford was a guy last season, hit 19 home runs, kind of out of nowhere, doesn't actually hit that many fly balls, but got, you know, he still has a pretty good home run fly ball split. I just worry that a guy like him who doesn't hit that many fly balls, who doesn't have overwhelming power, is going to have a hard time getting the ball out of the yard, right? The other player I do want to talk about in this light, only because he's so fun for me to talk about, is Isak Paredes. That was actually the first guy that came to mind. I'm like, oh man, is this going to make it harder for Isak Paredes? Let's assume there's a dead ball. Does that make it harder for Isak Paredes, who just doesn't hit the ball very hard, to hit home runs? And the answer for him specifically is no. And that's because he's not trying to hit 400-foot home runs. The basic thought experiment you can do is, let's say you know that a fly ball is going to travel 350 feet. Think of all the different ways that that can be a hit and not an out, right? It's very hard for a 350-foot fly ball to count as a hit. That's because most of the field is still grass at 350 feet, right? Most of the field, which means any outfielder has plenty of time to get under that 350-foot fly ball, unless you hit it right down the foul line, right? Foul lines, pretty much league-wide, a 350-foot fly ball is a home run. And guess what Isak Paredes does better than any player on an active roster right now? Fly balls specifically. In fact, as of this moment, no player with at least one plate appearance who is on an active 25-man roster pulls more fly balls than Isak Paredes, right? You would think that some dude out there has one fly ball and that he pulled it. In fact, you only need to get to 50% to beat Paredes. He's at 47%. There is no player. If you take the minimum plate appearances ending in fly ball required down to one, there is no player on an active roster over the last three seasons from 2019 to today who has at least one plate appearance and is currently on a 25-man roster that pulls fly balls more than Isak Paredes, right? In fact, there's only one player in all of baseball, not like whether or not they're on an active roster, that has more pull, like has a better pulled fly ball rate than Paredes over those last three seasons. And it's Albert Pujols, who's the only other guy that pulled fly balls at the rate that Paredes does. So that's how I really wanted to talk about it. I had to find a way. I was going to do it. I was going to talk about Isak Paredes. Nobody has mastered the art of the pull fly ball better than Isak Paredes. Like, even by accident, right? Like, again, it wouldn't take much to have a pull fly ball rate if you only had two fly balls in your entire major league career. And guys just don't do it. Overwhelmingly, fly balls are hit the other way or to center. Isak Paredes has mastered it. If anyone thinks that they are selling high on Isak Paredes, go get him right now, right? They all, because they're going to keep looking at that StatCast page. You're going to keep seeing all that blue. They're going to keep thinking this is going to fall apart, and it isn't, because he has a skill that nobody else in the league can say that they're as good as him at pulling fly balls.
Yeah, and he's put up big numbers now. This is his second year where he's, you know, been very fantasy productive. So I don't think you can think of him at all as a sell high guy. He hit 31 home runs last season.
Yeah, and there's always going to be people out there looking at that StatCast page and thinking, I got to move this. This is going to fall apart. It isn't. And the reason I wanted to bring up now is there's going to be talk about, like, okay, what kind of player is hurt if the ball is dead, right? Isak Paredes will, like, whatever you, whatever search criteria you use, right? Guys that don't hit fly balls very hard, guys that hit a lot of fly balls. Isak Paredes is on all those lists, but he doesn't count because he is truly a unicorn in today's game. The way that he pulls fly balls is absolutely unreal. It makes him like he is park proof. He could do what he's doing in every major league park and it would work just as well. Mm-hmm. Right. He is like the only thing that can beat him is good pitching because that's the only way to beat good offense, right? Mm-hmm. Is good pitching. Good pitching always beats good offense pretty much every time. But, you know, rabbit ball versus dead ball versus, like, there's no real condition that can stop Isak Paredes except for maybe like gale force winds to push that ball foul. It is incredible what he's doing.
Mm. And he's one of the few Rays who play every day too, right? There's just a few of them that aren't platooned in that lineup too. So that's another big plus as well.
The Tigers traded him for Austin freaking Meadows, who, you know, has his own issues. And I got no problem with that, but he's not in the league and Isak Paredes is, and he's amazing.
Hmm. All right. Well, I failed to say we're recording this, by the way, June 30th. It's about 12:30 Eastern time. So if any news breaks that we don't cover, that's the reason why. But there was some news this week that I think we should just go over in terms of, you know, fantasy implication. And Philly's one of the best teams in baseball lost two huge cogs to their lineup in Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber. Both hit the IL this week. So I don't have to tell you, you know, how good Harper is at 20 home runs, 58 RBI, 303 batting average this season. And Schwarber, 17 home runs with a 250 batting average, which, you know, that's a lot better than what he's been doing in previous year. Always a huge home run hitter for Schwarber. But also another thing that you and I have joked around about is why is this guy, you know, hitting leadoff? And finally this year, he's showing us why. He's got an OBP of 373. So just in terms of you're never going to fully replace guys like this, you know, like Harper and Schwarber, but out of your lineup. But, you know, I've noticed Bryson Stott has been batting leadoff. I guess Saturday, they've only hit the IL very recently, but Stott batted leadoff on Saturday, two hits and a walk. He's kind of had an up and down kind of season. He's got 20 stolen bases, five homers, and a 239 batting average. But at first place now, at first base now in place of Bryce Harper, you have Cody Clemens. You know, not much, in my opinion, not much fantasy value there. But Brandon Marsh now playing left field, batting cleanup. So, you know, obviously huge gaps in the Phillies lineup now. But I guess you could say Nick Castellanos, time to get going, because 11 home runs, 222 batting average. We know he's a lot better than that. You know him very well from his time with the Tigers.
Yeah, goodness gracious. You should not be worried about streaming against the Phillies. Like, they're still not necessarily the worst offense in baseball. Hmm. They still have, I mean, this offense is going to go right now as far as Alec Bohm is going to carry him.
Sure.
Right? He's been swinging a hot bat for quite some time. Mm-hmm. He's kind of the heart of the offense now. Yeah. But make no mistake, this is not like a guy who I would expect to hit 20 home runs very often, yeah. Right? He did it last year, got exactly 20. He's a little short of that pace right now. Bryson Stott, like you mentioned, he goes back to the leadoff spot. He's been hitting better over the last week or so. He was one of the hottest players in baseball earlier this season, and mm-hmm. then he went to being one of the coldest because baseball is a cruel and fickle game, and that's just kind of what happens. But him leading off, if you had been benching him, it's probably time to put him back in the lineup. Leading off is just a good, you know, it's a good place. And he still gets, you know, he still gets to hit in front of Trey Turner, who, you know, hasn't been amazing since he came back, but, mm-hmm. you know, looks fine. I don't see anything there that makes me concerned that Trey Turner can't beat Trey Turner, but man, the rest of this lineup is all of a sudden pretty toothless, right? Brandon Marsh, Nick Castellanos, Cody Clemens, Whit Merrifield, Garrett Stubbs, and Yoan Rojas. I kind of hoped that this would maybe that they'd like move Bohm to first and give Edmundo Sosa a chance to play every day again, but they haven't done that yet. Right. He's already taken a seat once. Actually today, Sunday, Edmundo Sosa is not in the lineup. He didn't play on Friday either. So this isn't a chance to maybe get Edmundo Sosa back. That was the guy I really hoped would be given an opportunity in this, mm-hmm. but really the big takeaways are, Brandon Marsh is hitting okay. He's probably a bit more streamable now that he's hitting fourth. in front of Stott, Turner, and Bohm. Castellanos has been just really up and down all season long, really since the start of last season. He's someone who maybe a speculative ad in a, you know, in a 4 or 5 outfield league, right? If he's been cut, which he has been in a lot of places. And I really can't get behind anyone on this offense after that. Right. Like I don't see any way in a 12th, like in a 12th team, I really don't want to add Brandon Marsh unless I'm very strapped at outfield and just have to get a bat, because Marsh is extremely variable because of that high strikeout rate. It's 31% now. Sure, he walks more, so in OBP leagues, there's a bit more, I guess, like juice there currently. I mean, he's a guy who can go like 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases in a year, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, depending on how good his hot streaks are, but just not a big fan of what he brings to the table overall in fantasy, because it's just, it's not enough power. It's not enough speed. It's not any of those things. Like, you're not chasing very much upside, which is what I like to do in a 12 teamer. So yeah, the winner, I guess, is Stott. He's going to get a chance to leave off for a while. And everyone else is just about the same, except maybe with some more plate appearances, specifically for Marsh and Castellanos.
Yeah. And good call on Alec Bohm. Unfortunately, I expected that power to kind of develop a little bit more, but you know, so far in 80 games, 9 home runs. I guess if you're looking for, looking for a little indication that maybe he's hitting for a little bit more power, he has 28 doubles already. Leads the league, had 31 last season. So maybe second half, maybe some of those doubles turn more into home runs, but batting 300. So he's really been good all season long.
And that's really what he did. He kind of changed himself as a hitter, because he was more of a slugger as he was coming up through the system. And what he decided really was that he would be a different kind of hitter. He turned himself into more of like a line drive doubles type guy. Nothing wrong with that, right? Like, this is still a very valuable player. I think he's got a he got to 97 RBI last year. I think he's got a pretty good shot to get over 100 this year. And sure, it's only 20 home runs, but you know, he's sort of like the batting average version of what you'd expect from a guy like Alex Bregman, who doesn't hit a ton of home runs. But for Bregman, it's a lot of, you know, OBP. And for Bohm, it's, I mean, his OBP is okay, but not nearly as good as his batting average.
Right.
You know, that he can keep hitting 280, 290 all season. So sort of like the batting average version of Alex Bregman. That's what you should be looking at when you're looking at Alec Bohm. There's not 30 home runs here. There's probably not 25.
Right.
But there's a solid 18 to 20 with really good ratios and good counting stats.
Sure. Yeah. Any concern that in his first 10 games back, Trey Turner hasn't stolen a base yet? I mean, batting okay, but
I mean, in any given season, right? Like, guys won't, like, he wasn't stealing all that much before then. Plenty of 10 game stretches before that, you know, didn't turn into a lot of stolen bases. Right now, most projection, like, Trey Turner, I'm not worried yet. Right? Like, there's nothing for me to say like, oh, this is what I see. He's not going to do it. Right. There's no chance he's going to steal a base, but like, he did have, I don't know exactly how many games, but he had a big stretch like this before. Some of it is just opponents and opportunities, right? Like, since coming back, he went against the Tigers. The Tigers are really good at stopping opposing base runners, right? Teams don't run on the Tigers that much.
Not so like
I'm thinking a lot of it is simply just opportunity and just like it not being a good time in the game to do that. Right. Like, this kind of sample, that can totally be the case. Now, if he starts running into some more teams that allow, like, I haven't looked at the schedule, but like, if he doesn't run against the Mets, then I'll be concerned.
Yep. And you've brought that up in the past in terms of, you know, kind of being able to kind of stream some stolen bases too. I mean, a big deal was made about that Sunday game, Red Sox Yankees, where the Red Sox just ran wild on the Yanks, stole 9 bases that day. And so now, like, you're right, there's, you know, there's a movement where you start to look at the schedule in terms of trying to find out, you know, who you can steal against.
Yeah, I mean, it's stealing bases isn't like hitting, where you just do it every time you get the chance, right? Stolen bases is a strategic part of the game, mm-hmm. which is great. And certain teams are really bad at preventing you from doing that,
yep.
right? It's certain teams, and it's certain batteries even that'll be particularly bad. But like the Giants, the Mets, the White Sox, the Rays, those teams stand out. Right. Those are teams that really allow a lot of stolen bases. The team, you know, some of the recent series that Trey Turner's been in were against Miami and Detroit. And guess what? They're the fourth and fifth best teams in the league at catching base runners. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, teams do try to steal against the Marlins and they are successful, but they're not successful that often. Mm-hmm. Right. In terms of like how often they try. So those are tough teams to run against. So what I would be worried about Trey Turner, again, if they face someone like the Giants, the Mets, the White Sox, the Rays, the Cardinals, the Cubs, if you play those teams and you don't run, that's a problem.
Right. Right. All right. Good point. All right. Let's take our first break here. When we come back, James Wood is getting called up for the Nationals. Also want to find out if Scott might think it might be a little Christmas in July. We'll talk more about that right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina, you can follow me on X at Joe Galina. You can follow my man Scott Chu at If the Chu Fits. And Scott, a lot of fantasy managers have been waiting for this, and we got news that James Wood, outfielder for the Nationals, is getting called up on Monday. Remember, he big time prospect, part of the deal that sent Juan Soto to the Padres. And by the way, just an aside, Juan Soto sat yesterday on Saturday. Hurt his hand sliding into home plate, I think it was, on the Friday night game. Supposedly, x-rays came back negative, so we'll see. I don't know if the Yankees have announced their lineup for today yet, but just keep that in the side, you know, as you're making your lineup decisions. Check Juan Soto's status. But James Wood, like I said, a lot of people have been waiting for him to get called up. 2024 stats for AAA team, 52 games, 10 homers, 10 stolen bases, has really cut down that strikeout rate from last season. In AA, in 87 games last season, he struck out almost 34% of the time. So, you know, what do you think about James Wood? What could we expect? I mean, might have been called up sooner because he had a hamstring injury earlier in the season, but you know, maybe that injury worked in Nationals' favor because he won't be able to earn a full year of service this time for this year. But are you adding James Wood, or is it only in deeper leagues that you're adding him? What do you think about James Wood?
I mean, so he should be rostered in every league. The reason you might not is your third outfielder is someone like Anthony Santander, right? Where you've already hit gold in the outfield and you just don't have, or, you know, your hitting's real good. You don't have an open spot in the outfield or utility to bring in James Wood, mm-hmm. but every league is going to have multiple managers who need a guy with this kind of power. So glad you called out that drop in strikeout rate. That's what the Nats were looking for, mm-hmm. right? Like that's what they needed to see. They saw high strikeout rates when he was in complex, when he's single A, double A, he gets to triple A and kind of fixes it. Now, we've talked about this a lot. The jump between AAA pitching and major league pitching is enormous. It is far bigger than any of the jumps he's made in the minor leagues, right? The quality of pitching, like, you know, every bullpen guy comes out with a breaker and throwing, you know, 97, right? Like there's a big change in the quality of pitching. But if that strikeout rate, I mean, I don't expect him to come up and have a 20% strikeout rate for very long, right? But if it can stay between like 25 to 30%, that's fine because he's going to take above average walks. I think that walk rate should be around 10%, 17.3% in AAA. But again, we expect to see walk rates come down a bit when they get to the majors because the major leaguers are better strike throwers. They will make you, if they think that you can't damage a pitch in the zone, they will give you pitches in the zone, mm-hmm. right? Whereas minor league guys, they just don't have that kind of command and control. They walk you without meaning to, right? So I think this is a guy who, you know, right now, 21 years old. I think if he played a full season, you're probably looking at somewhere around like 20 to 25 home runs because I anticipate he's going to have some growing pains throughout that first season. Mm-hmm. Right. But overall, the kind of power we're looking at here is like a 30 to 35 home run kind of bat. This is a guy who can steal bases as well. I don't know how, like the Nationals, it's funny. Speed isn't a huge part of Wood's game, but the Nationals don't care about that. Right. Cause they've been sending Winker all year.
Like we talked Lane about Thomas that in previous not a episodes. Speed
yeah.
Guy.
yeah. Like Lane Thomas is not a speed guy. He's going to steal like a billion bases because the Nats just don't care if you're fast. Like they're just going to send you, mm-hmm. right? They're going to say, hey, we timed this guy up and he's not very good at getting you out. Give it a go, right? It's not like anyone behind you is going to hit. So have at it. Take a run. So I think James Wood is going to be an everyday player. I think there's a wide open spot right at center field. I wouldn't be shocked to see if we see Jacob Young sent down. They could probably send down someone else, but ultimately Jacob Young likely to no longer be a full-time player. So they'll go with, you know, an outfield that maybe isn't like the most amazing in terms of defensive ability, but I mean, you know, it's not as though Wood is a bad fielder, mm-hmm. right? But the thing he's bringing is power. Right. Mm-hmm. The reason this guy is a top five prospect is because he has got real power, 35 home run power. And I mean, maybe more if he unlocks it. Right. Huge ceiling. So if you're sitting on one of these like number one waivers and you've got an open spot or, you know, in those leagues, like, yes, James Wood is worth your number one waiver. If mm-hmm. you've been holding on to that priority. Yes. James Wood is worth a big chunk of your fab, especially if you have a hole at power or, you know, something like that. Like I know in any league where he's available and I'm doing fab, I'm probably spending a bunch of fab on it mm-hmm. because I think he's coming up. He's getting an opportunity. The Nats, some teams call guys up and mess with them. Right? Oh, we've seen Orioles. That this year in Baltimore a lot, right? right? The Rays. But the Nats historically have not been that way, right? Mm-hmm. When they called up Juan Soto and he hit, he stayed. Mm-hmm. Right? Like they didn't play. Juan Soto was not a huge prospect at the time. They were like, but we need a guy to play and he looks pretty good. So come on in, see what you can do. That's what rebuilding teams should be doing. And I love that they're going to give Wood this opportunity. It's earlier than I thought it would be. But again, he's cleaned up that strikeout rate a lot faster than I thought he would. And he's mm-hmm. kept it up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is a high priority ad everywhere. You need power.
Yep. Hey, cleaned up the strikeout rate. You're right. And also, like I said, yeah, he's not going to earn a full year of service time, so why not? You know, it's not like the Nationals.
Who are they holding back if they let him play every day, right? Like right. Harold Ramirez, who they literally picked up off the waiver wire in mm-hmm. the season, mm-hmm. right? Like there's DH at-bats to take from Harold Ramirez. There is center field work that you can take from Jacob Young. You can also, you know, there's plenty of guys. Like Eddie Rosario does not still need to be on this roster, right? Like there's guys that can send down and just let James Wood play. Mm-hmm. There's no reason they shouldn't. And again, this isn't a team with a history of jerking people around that way.
Right. Right.
Except for Steven Strasburg. That was it. Well, that was it.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a look at another prospect that was called up recently by the Guardians. And so I'm going to, you know, I checked Baseball Reference because I want to make sure I try to pronounce his first name correctly, but I believe it's John Kenzie Noel. His first name is John Kenzie, and last name Noel, N-O-E-L. That's why I made that weird, tried to make a joke when I said Christmas in July, but you spell his name if you're looking for it, is J-H-O-N-E-N-S-K-Y. That's his first name. So has spent a lot of time in the minor leagues, at first base, third base, and the outfield. And Noel obviously called up by the Guardians, and they have a pretty good first baseman in Josh Naylor. He's been a little slumping past week or so, but look, the guy's got 20 home runs and 58 RBI, so I don't think that Noel was called up. to replace him, but obviously to give the Guardians some pop in the outfield. And I believe he hit a home run last night, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, played right field, hit a home run on Saturday. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, I think two different kind of hitters because, we talked about Wood, his batting average has been a little bit higher. But you look at in the minor leagues, the triple slash for John Kenzie Noel, 257, 334, 490. So what are we thinking about Noel? You think he's going to be getting plenty of play time? Or
I think there is some playing time to be had there. The Guardians have had some holes in that outfield. They've wanted, I think, to bring more thump into the lineup. I think they've got some room in the outfield. You know, they've got some guys who just aren't hitting, although, you know, like Tyler Freeman's our current center fielder and Noel's not going to play center field, but maybe Daniel Schneeman can, a guy who's sort of come up and been okay for them. But yeah, what they wanted is pop, right? David Fry has been a nice little ad for them, but he hasn't been very consistent. He got real, real hot for that bit. I still like the skills there, but they're not getting the pop they hoped for. They thought Bo Naylor maybe could do that. He's been up and down as well. So Noel is their best power prospect. He's got true like 80 grade raw power. And you know, he shares that with Wood, right? Like both guys have extreme raw power. The difference with Noel is one, he doesn't walk nearly as much as Wood does. He hasn't in the minor leagues. So he's going to have more of a league average walk rate. And then Noel is, he's a plotter, right? This is not a dude with a lot of speed.
Right.
He can play some okay defensive first, but like they don't need him to do that. And I'm not sure they're going to send Naylor back into the outfield either. It's funny, like Naylor and Noel are actually sort of similar in this way. They're not high walk rate guys. They've got a bunch of power for Naylor. It was all hidden behind this high ground ball rate. And we haven't had that problem with Noel. I think, you know, Noel is more of a true fly ball hitter, hits a ton of infield pop-ups though. That is the thing I'm watching. You know, so for most guys, you know, like with Wood, I'm saying, hey, watch that strikeout rate, right? He's had strikeout problems before. Let's see what happens. That's not the case with Noel. He has infield flyout rates, right? Like he does it like 20-30% of the time. He'll pop out. So that is something to kind of watch for. I think that would make it hard for teams to keep getting him up there if he just, you know, gets into a slump and just keeps popping out, because pop outs have no, like pop outs are either one or two outs, right? Like they're never zero.
Right.
So that is a bit of a concern, but you know, if you've got a little bit of leftover fab, you want that backup bid for power. Noel's where it is, right? Wood, again, much, much better as a prospect. Noel is sort of this low grade guy that I was only aware of because in some deeper dynasties, I've scooped him up because I'm like, well, big power and doesn't strike out a lot, right? Like I love that. But that doesn't mean it's automatically going to work. Noel, again, someone who can definitely hit home runs. If he can, you know, if he can avoid the infield fly, this is a guy who can hit, you know, like real home run power, like 25-30 home run power here, realistically in terms, you know, raw power, it could be more, but realistically, I think it's something like in a peak year, he could hit 25 to 30 of them in a full season. So yeah, that's worth chasing. It's harder. That's going to be hard to do in a 12 teamer because playing time's a little bit up in the air. It's not quite as sure of a thing, but yeah, he's definitely someone who can contribute in slightly deeper leagues, especially if he can grab some outfield eligibility. That'd be pretty great.
Yeah, yeah. If there's anything that the Guardians are missing, it's, you know, sluggers, right? I mean, got really good pitching and a tremendous bullpen. And, their other really good offensive force and is Stephen Kwan, and he's not really bad. I mean, he's hitting 7 home runs in his first 54 games, which is a lot for him, but obviously a guy that just gets on base and
career high average.
Yeah.
Career high through 55 games. He played 2 full seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And Stephen Kwan has set a career high in home runs with 7.
Yeah.
Right now the speed is down. That's kind of a weird thing. You would expect him to be a 20 stolen base guy. He's not doing that right now, but it's hard to steal bases when you hit doubles.
Yeah.
So I'm very, you know, I think Kwan is kind of exciting.
Yeah. Right now. It's fun to watch too. Yeah. And you know, you talk, like you said, about a potential dead ball and you got a guy like Kwan, with career high in home runs already. So, but Mike Trout is in the new, made some news on Saturday because he says he's getting closer to return, expected to be back late July. He says he's basically pain free. Remember, he had surgery to repair a meniscus tear in his left knee. That happened at the end of April. So Angels desperately need him back. I mean, they just got back Miguel Sano, who back at third base, and he really hasn't done much since his return to the major leagues. 24 games, 2 home runs. And Joe Adell's season really, really taking a downturn. When you look at his last 24 games, batting 125 with a 398 OPS, and Adell, obviously droppable. Sad, because this was probably Adell's last chance to prove himself worthy of that moniker of being like a top prospect, right? But then again, you have Willie Calhoun, who's in 44 games hitting 280 for the Angels, but they really, really could use Trout in that lineup.
Yeah, if they want anyone to come to the ballpark, right? Let me tell you something. Willie Calhoun is not yet 30 years old. Mm-hmm. Just to throw that out there.
Yeah.
That blows my mind. Because he has been in, we've seen Willie Calhoun in the league since 2017.
Yeah.
He's been around a long time. But yeah, so, you know, with Trout coming back, obviously he'll be an instant start every day, sure. No concerns. He's someone that always should have been on your IL because of what he can do when he's healthy. Yeah, I think I'll start with Adell, and it is really painful to watch right now. If there's any silver lining, it's that the strikeouts have come down lately. I mean, he's really pulled the strikeout rate, you know, back under control over the last, 2 weeks, you know, since June 19th, he has struck out just 11.5% of the time, but he has a -1 WRC plus. He's not striking out, but he's also not doing any damage whatsoever. Hitting 125, slugging 208 in that stretch. That's not very good.
No.
So, again, like, he's hit some balls hard in that span. They just haven't been worth anything. So, you know, you're someone in a deep, deep dynasty. I'm not cutting him yet, but it kind of looks like this, like you said, this was really his last chance. He's probably, he's actually technically pre-arb right now. So he'll like stay on the Angels roster, but it's hard to see him winning a full-time spot. And that was the thing with Adell, is like, we got really excited because he has crazy upside, but he was one of these players. We talk about this trope all the time, and it's high upside, low floor, right? When he's hot, he can look like one of the better power hitters, you know, in the league. And when he's cold, you wonder how he's in the league, right? Like, that's the level of variability you get with a guy like Joe Adell, who has extreme contact problems, very aggressive, doesn't walk. So he'll have a lot of bad hit balls, and it's tough, right? Like, he's now at 252 games with a 71 WRC plus. It's actually worse this year than it was last year through 62 games. It's just overall, it's hard to see a path forward where he's successful. But someone who has been successful in that lineup and who will really benefit when Trout is back is Taylor Ward. Taylor Ward was slumping for quite a long time. He's really turned things back around over the last, couple of weeks. You know, using that same date, June 19th, Ward is hitting .333, slugging .636 in that stretch. So he may have gotten rage dropped in a couple of leagues when he was on that long slump. Not in deeper leagues, I don't think anyone would have done that, but in those 12 teamers, that definitely happened. And Taylor Ward has like top 60 hitter upside, right? I keep him ranked around there all the time because he's got that kind of ability. So, if he was dropped anywhere and hasn't been scooped back up, you should be the one who did it. He's just been a doubles machine. He's hitting home runs. He's doing it all. So, Taylor Ward, someone who, if you don't be dissuaded when Taylor Ward goes on these slumps, we've seen it happen before. He does rebound. He rebounds hard. So, keep having the faith. That's a good hitter, Taylor Ward. And it's injuries that have held him back. He's been healthy this year, and he's on pace to hit 28 home runs, right? Despite the long slumps, he's got 14 home runs already through 80 games. He'll probably hit another 12 to 14 of them. I think the batting average can get a bit better and hit around 260. This is a player that you should absolutely be investing in. Again, if someone thinks they're selling high, they're going to say, oh, hey, he's hot again. Maybe I can finally get rid of him. Let them get rid of him to you. Because again, this is a guy with real, yeah, I mean, all season, I'll probably keep him somewhere in the top 75 hitters. He's got top 50 upside, I'd say.
Yeah, when you say sell high, just, you know what, I thought of, we had a discussion a couple of podcasts ago about Giancarlo Stanton, right? We were recommending anyone who was rostering him to try to sell him because, you know, he was hitting for a decent average for him, but hitting the home runs again, playing every day. And look, he's on the IL for a month with a hamstring injury. So, yeah, that sell high and buy low, it's, you know, really
it's hard because logically, right, we're humans are really bad at buying low and selling high, right? Because what happens is the very human things we're like, well, why would I want to sell this guy? He's doing great, right? Like, he's got a lot more upside, but like, that's a recency bias. Like, well, a lot of times we'll tell you, like, dude, Giancarlo Stanton, yes, can he hit home runs? Absolutely. He can hit a whole boatload of them, and he'll also, like, injury risk, it's been a huge problem for Stanton, his, you know, really his entire career, right? Like, he's had one time in his career that he's put together back-to-back healthy seasons, right? He didn't even play half of the 60-game season. He only played 23 games in 2020, right? Yeah. 100, you know, in 2022, 110. 100, in 2023, 101. This year, he's at 69. He's probably going to get to about 120,
right?
Yeah. Assuming he doesn't go back on the IL after this stint.
And
there's a reason we talk about selling high. Yeah. And that's why, because there was so much risk. And there's few times Giancarlo Stanton has been a tradable asset. And that was one of them.
And I forget what grade strain this hamstring issue is with him, but supposedly it's not even anything that's considered really bad. And right from day one, they said, well, he's going to miss a month. So we warned you, right? Okay, so that's all we could do. All right, so let's take our second break. When we come back, we'll talk about a few hitters who've really benefited from hitting at the top of the lineup. We'll talk about them right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. My man Scott Chu puts out his hitter list every Wednesday. He ranks the top 150 hitters and also has a taxi squad portion of that article, which is really, really a great resource to use. He also hosts the pitcher list AMA every Friday, so really good stuff there. Scott, Luis Matos, outfielder for the Giants. He's back in the bigs, and he's playing regularly. Remember all the hoopla that accompanied his first taste of the majors earlier in the season. He had that really tremendous weekend that kind of tailed off and then was sent down to the minor league. So Matos is back, playing regularly, first seven games, batting .400 with two home runs, three RBI. You think he's going to stick this time?
Maybe. So Matos, you know, Matos is a poor man's version of the Luis Arraez in terms of approach and what he's trying to do. So, you know, the couple of home runs he's hit are somewhat of a surprise, but what Matos is trying to do is put every ball in play, right? Like, this dude, this season, 116 plate appearances, 3.4% walk rate, 9.5% strikeout rate. What's that mean? That means everything's in play. That means like 87% of his plate appearances end with a ball in play, not a strikeout, not a walk, ball in play, which is really nice in like points leagues because he's rarely putting up a negative for you.
Right.
Right. Most points leagues penalize for strikeouts. You get points for contact, things like that. So that's what he'll do. He'll either be a zero or like a one or a two every at bat. Right. Just like never, like rarely striking out. So that, and like, that's what I would continue to expect him to do. He can put up some decent batting average in spurts. It'll be real high because, you know, aggressive players get hot and they're a lot more prone to that, up those ups and downs. But yeah, Matos is a guy with generally limited power and generally speaking, limited speed. So like in a full season, this, like, I think he could have like a nice season where he puts up like 15 home runs and steals like 12 bases, right? But he hits like 270, 280. That's the kind of player we're looking at here. I think most of the time you're going to see something like 12 home runs and like 10 steals, but you know, he'll hit 270. So again, it's like a, like I said, a poor man's Arias. Don't expect a ton. You know, he might get some counting stats if the Giants decide to lead him off. They've not done that since they've brought him back up. He's been hitting in that bottom third of the order. So yeah, it's a decent points league play if you have got like five outfield spots, but in like 12 teamers, roto, head-to-head cats, he's really hard to get excited about because he doesn't barrel the ball because he didn't try to.
Right.
Right. This is a line drive sort of hitter, or, you know, sometimes ground balls. He's just trying to put the thing in play.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good stuff. Let's move over to the Cincinnati Reds. And we had talked about him in previous episodes, but he's finally back. Noel V. Marte, back with the big league club after serving a suspension for PED use, hitting fifth, playing third base. Jamer Candelario had been out of the lineup, nursing a hamstring injury, not on the IL because he's in Sunday's lineup. He's DHing, and Marte is playing third base in Sunday's lineup. So he had a tough go around in 12 games in Triple A leading up to his reinstatement, but he's done okay since he's back. Like I said, batting in the middle of that lineup, batting fifth. Another guy, though, we'll talk Marte, but another guy that's been on fire, and I think he was, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's always been one of your favorites, is Jonathan India. And as we were heading to the break, I mentioned there's some players that really just have taken off since hitting leadoff, and he has been on a tear, Scott. Over his last 25 games, batting .386 with a 1.043 OPS, basically a doubles machine lately. you know, talk to me about
if any of you have watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine. There's a scene where Captain Holt just goes, "Vindication!
Vindication!"
That's me right now. I have been just begging the Reds, not directly because I don't know them. I don't know anyone in their front office. I'm not that important. But I've just been begging for them to put Jonathan India in this leadoff spot. They've been using Will Benson, who is this all-or-nothing strikeout guy who does walk. But Jonathan India is built to leadoff. Mm-hmm. He's got a great approach for it. He doesn't strike out that much. He walks a ton. He's got some power. He's got a little bit of speed. Jonathan India, like, people have sort of push back on me for constantly, you know, I've been talking about him all year, even though he wasn't having much of a great season. And look, there's not a ton of power here, right? Those 21 home runs he hit in 2021, that's probably going to end up being close to a career high. He did hit 17 home runs last year, but that's not really the way he's approaching the game right now. He's a bit more of a, look, I'm going to put the ball in play. I'm going to drive it, do some line drives. He's not trying to lift the ball. He's not trying to pull the ball. He's not doing any of that stuff. He's just putting the bat on the ball, trying to make contact. So I talked about Matos being like, you know, in a good year, like 15 home runs, 10 steals and 270, but with low counting stats. This is a better version of that, even though it's not quite as extreme, because Jonathan India right now has got that 12.9% walk rate, 19.9% strikeout rate. Those are the kind of numbers I expect India to have, but he can get better counting stats and he can probably be more of like a 17 to 18 home run, like 15 stolen base guy, especially leading off if he gets more chances to do that. Big fan of Jonathan India. I think he should, you know, he's hopefully been scooped up everywhere if he hasn't been. This is a guy I think that can stick as your second baseman for the season, right? Like, this is a guy who, I mean, he's still only 27 years old. He, you know, he had a really nice rookie year, but like, don't think about that. I mean, actually you should. It's fairly close to what I think he can be. But Jonathan India as leadoff guy for the Reds, it's a great position for him to be in. That's what we're really excited about. Noel V. Marte has more fantasy upside in that. He's like a 20 home run, 20 stolen base guy in a full year. He can hit for a decent average as well, maybe 260, 270. Don't expect a great OBP. He walked a little bit in the minor leagues, but we did not see it in his major league debut. We haven't actually seen him that much in the majors. We've talked about him a lot more than he's actually played. There's still a guy with, 38 games in the major leagues coming into Sunday. Like it's a fairly small sample, but again, this is a 20 home run, 20 stolen base sort of bat, a guy who I think can, you know, be a nice difference maker for you at third base, but not, you know, this is never a guy who's going to, he doesn't have the profile in my mind to like ever finish as like a top five, top seven third baseman in the league. That's just not what Marte can do, but he can very solidly be a top 10 to 12 third baseman year in and year out because of the little bit of everything he brings to the table. So Marte's exciting. I think again, Jonathan India is probably not someone that can finish in the top five at second base either, but again, leading off, he can put up a ton of runs on an offense that can run really hot and cold. He's got a great home ballpark. You know, India, again, another guy who I think can be a top 10 second baseman rest of the way, and had a lot less fanfare than Marte, even though Jonathan India, like previously, I don't remember if he was rookie of the year or not, but he certainly got close to it if he didn't back when he debuted back in 2021. And then he's had injury problems since then.
Yeah, that's the key, is the injuries with India. But I was going to talk about, you know, the Orioles and their platooning, but we could gloss over that. I mean, Kerstad is back. Keston Kerstad's back. Hit a grand slam on Saturday. But look, he's going to be in a platoon with Austin Hayes. Colton Cowser got off to that hot start. He's platooning with Cedric Mullins. Look, if these guys start hitting the platoon, they won't be platooning anymore, right? I mean, it's as simple as that.
Unless they do what they're doing right now, and that's where they're all hitting. They're all hitting, right? Like,
well, you know, the trade deadline's coming up. So, you know, yeah, Mullins could be moved and, you know, Hayes could be moved.
Yeah, you wonder, you wonder what's going to happen with them at the trade deadline, because I think most people agree what they need is a pitcher, right? Doesn't have to be an ace per se, but they definitely need a starting pitcher. You know, they're not going to get Bradish back. So, you know, they'll have, you know, Burns is on the paternity list, but they'll have their ace, right? And they've got Grayson Rodriguez a second. They need that third guy. They need like a Jack Flaherty type, right? They need that guy who can be that number three for them in the playoffs. And they've, what's interesting about them is they've got guys they can move who have, I think, real value that aren't even on the major league roster, right? Like, so they've got a guy in the minors who's a, you know, fairly well-regarded prospect, which is Samuel Basalo. He's a catcher first baseman. There's no holes open at catcher and first base in Baltimore. So I wonder if they'll move a guy like him to try to get that piece, you know, especially like one of those 1 or 2 year rental guys. Like, God, they could go get a Seth Lugo, right? Like, that instantly makes his team scarier for the playoffs. Give him that, you know, give him that lefty arm in that three man rotation. I think that, I mean, Samuel Basalo is way more than you need to spend to get Seth Lugo. They've got a couple other guys too, I think they could try to move. I'm not sure that Cedric Mullins will be the one, because the type of team that would be interested in Cedric Mullins is a contender, right? Like, he's almost 30 years old. Like, it's a contender that wants Cedric Mullins. So I do wonder how exactly it's going to play out, but I think what we'll see is a trade of a, you know, maybe not Basalo. That actually would be a pretty big deal move, but like, maybe a Connor Norby sort of guy, or, you know, something like that, to just find, you know, to sort of just kind of make it work with some of their lower, you know, their lower grade prospects would still be decent prospects on some of these other teams.
Right.
Dylan Beavers, maybe former first round pick.
Yeah, they're so deep. They're so deep. They did such a good job.
Like, it's ridiculous. Kobe, we I didn't even mention Kobe Mayo, who's got nowhere to, like, actually, Kobe Mayo's the one guy who I think has an open spot. Like, they're starting Ramon Urias at third base, and they don't need to, right? But they'd probably be more likely to move Westberg over to third and then bring up someone else to play second, like a Connor Norby or Jackson Holliday again, something like that. So they've got so many moving parts. It makes them extremely dynamic, and their need is a third starting pitcher. Like, they don't need, like, they don't have this huge need in the lineup they need to fill. They don't need an ace. They need like a solid number two, number three guy, because with Grayson Rodriguez and Corbin Burns, they're pretty much ready to go. And long-term, they've still got Bradish.
Right.
So I think they'll make a move, and it's not going to be, I don't know if it's going to be one of these bombastic moves. I'm not sure how much it's going to clear us up for fantasy. Right, because you're still going to have O'Hearn and Mountcastle. at DH and first base, you're still going to have Kowser and Westberg and Westberg's an everyday guy, but like Kowser and Mullins and Hayes when he's hot. You've got Kerstad. You've got all these guys who probably deserve to play, but don't have room. And the Orioles kind of don't. The Orioles don't run a fantasy roster. They don't need any of these guys to be everyday players. Mm-hmm. They just don't. Right. If this is their window, which they're at the top of their division, so it is, like, you can win bringing all of them.
Why'd you have to bring up that they're at the top of their division? Just because my Yanks are slumping? That's okay.
Yeah. Oh, no. They're 53-32. That must hurt. That must hurt.
You know what? I'm going to, you know, because, you know, they got swept by the Mets. And so I was, you know, texting with my future son-in-law because he's a huge Met fan. And I said, you know what? I'm looking at your lineup and I'm looking at mine, you know, because Rizzo's hurt and Stanton's hurt, whatever. You know, I like your lineup better, the Mets lineup. And they've been so hot lately too, you know.
Can we talk about Iggy Iglesias performing his pop song before the game? It was amazing. You guys should go watch it. I love Jose Iglesias ever since he was in his Tiger days. He's a lot. That team is so fun right now. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the Mets a little. But I wanted to mention a guy that, I think it was a last time we were together, or maybe two episodes before, but Jackson Merrill, outfielder for the Padres. You weren't sure, you know, if you believed in his offensive, you can't say resurgence because he's a rookie, but he's been hot for a while now.
Power.
Yeah, that power surge, right? So you're looking over the past month, basically his last 26 games, 8 home runs with a 912 OPS, has 11 home runs, 40 RBI, 9 stolen bases on the season. So has he convinced you? I know that he's got his issues hitting against left-handed pitching, batting 209 against left-handers, 318 against right-handers, but I, you know, would have rostered him in more leagues, but I only got him in TGFBI. But I'm happy right now with what I'm getting from Jackson Merrill. Do you believe in the power?
Depends on what you mean. Do I believe he can be a very, very good major league hitter? Absolutely. So what he's got is a hit tool, right? So, the most home runs he'd ever hit in 100 games in the minor leagues, was 15. Mm-hmm. He did that last season in 114 games. He had 15 home runs between High A and Double A. Mm-hmm. He's got 12 right now. I think he can finish the year. He could push 20. This is a crazy hot streak for him right now. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because for a guy with, you know, he doesn't have a ton of power, right?
Yeah, he'll ever be a 30-35 home run guy.
No. Absolutely. I mean, 25 is probably more than I would expect him to hit in a full season. Mm-hmm. But, and what's weird too, is like the first thing I thought was he must be pulling a ton of fly balls. He's mm-hmm. not. He hits most everything up the middle because he's a hit tool guy. Now we have seen hit tool guys turn into power guys. I think the last time we talked, the comp I made on hit tool to power, not player to player comp, but the type of trajectory where you've got a bunch of hit tool, not a lot of power. You come to the majors and you show us power. It was Ozzie Albies. He was the last one that really struck me as a guy who can kind of do that. Merrill might be doing that. Right. He's not a very selective hitter. He's actually quite aggressive. I think the batting average is fairly real. This is a guy who can hit 270, 280 in any given year. Mm-hmm. I think that the, he's a high average, okay OBP guy. But again, this power is really hard to like say, oh, yeah, I buy it. Because we're talking about a guy who, prior to this stretch, I mean, we're just talking about from June 12th to today, has 9 home runs. He had 3 prior to this. Mm-hmm. 3. Right? Yeah. Like, it is unbelievable the type of hot streak this guy is on. So, no, this is not someone who's going to hit 25 home runs this year. Mm-hmm. I just don't see that because he's not shown us that at any real point in his career, apart from a 3-ish week stretch, actually like 2 and change, right? Not quite 3 weeks. He's been a slugger for not quite 3 weeks, mm-hmm. right? The season has been longer than that. So I don't buy him as like a 25 home run guy.
I buy him as a 20. He's already got 12 this year, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This year, I think he can do 20. But next year, I'm probably going to project a little lower than that. Again, unless we see some major change in his approach. But right now, we're not. What we're seeing is a guy who is getting much better results with the same, with everything else being the same.
Yeah. Right. And like you said, he's aggressive. But then again, I know his walks are down, like basically cut in half from 8.5 last season in double A to 4.6. But for all his aggressiveness, he still has just under 16% K rate. So that's
pretty good. Again, this is an excellent hit tool with Jackson Merrill. Like, don't, like, my concern is about the home run numbers.
Don't get fooled, right? Although there are some guys that over the course of their career, and like I said earlier, I don't think he's going to be a 30-35 home run guy, but there are some players that just develop, you know, the strength just over the years as they mature. Because how old is he? How old is he? He's
21.
21.
I mean, turn 21 in season.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing. So that's the part. So it, you can't project guys to do this. But I will tell you that it is possible for these high-end hit tool type prospects, which Jackson Merrill was a high-end prospect in part because he's, you know, he's got some speed and everything, but really it's that hit tool, right? He's not a great defender, but this is plus to plus plus contact. And that hit tool can turn into power, right? Because, you know, Ichiro Suzuki used to talk about this a lot. Hitting home runs is not about raw power. Most of it is about timing.
And if I remember about Ichiro Suzuki, I think that if he wanted to, he could. He was such a good hitter that he could change his approach and become a guy that would hit, you know, multiple home runs. Did he have that one season where he hit like 19 or 20 home runs? I got to look him up.
Yeah, he used to do it in batting practice all the time. Again, this is not to compare Jackson Merrill to Ichiro Suzuki. But what it, he hit 15 home runs 1 year with Seattle. But the thing that you can do is, like, players, we actually talked about this with Alec Bohm in the reverse. He went from a guy who had a decent hit tool and power, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to focus more on making contact and let my power turn singles into doubles and outs into singles, right? What Merrill is kind of doing is just getting amazing results. That's the only real way I can describe it. Merrill's getting amazing results out of mostly the same approach, which again is a reason that I'm a little skeptical on the power. I think obviously he's someone that I rank. He's someone that should be rostered in all leagues. He's someone that will stay rostered in all leagues. I'm just saying, like, enjoy the power, but don't pencil it in to your end of year stats.
If
you've been short on power and you've got Jackson Merrill right now and you've got James Wood out there. I'm not saying you're going to cut Merrill for Wood. That would be dumb. But you might still have a need for power. You don't at this moment, but you might later. And James Wood has much, much more power. And if you want to keep this power train you're on going, you're going to need to go find it elsewhere, because I don't think Merrill can sustain it for you for the rest of the season. Again, in terms of home run power.
Right.
Everything else he can do, even though the Padres still feel like batting him sixth for some reason, which just annoys the crap out of me. But I'm only skeptical about the home run power.
Right. And maybe there's something in the water in San Diego, because Kyle Higashioka, who's only a starter because Luis Camposano went on the IL due to thumb bruise, and I don't think he's going to be out that long. But Higashioka, and I know him pretty well because he was a Yankee for a couple of years, he has 9 home runs on the season in 33 games, so don't expect that to to last as well. So let's move on. I wanted to talk about just a couple of guys. I'll skip over some of the guys that were on the notes that I sent you, but I wanted to talk about just a couple of guys that have really done well and as leadoff hitters, because we mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but we spoke about him right after Ronald Acuna went down. Jared Kelenic, he just continues to just love hitting leadoff. And from, batting first, he's batting 362 in 14 games with a 1.01 OPS, has two of his three stolen bases as a leadoff hitter. And there's another guy, and I don't know if it's the Grimace.
Come on, Grimace. Look, Ronald, Sunday's everywhere.
So what, we talked about the Mets, that they've just been on fire lately. Good for them. But Francisco Lindor, you know, since he's been moved to the leadoff spot, he's really flourished, and he's been made no bones about it. He said, look, I'd rather be at the top of the lineup than you put me in the middle where I'm responsible for driving him in. I'd rather be the table setter. And since Lindor has been batting first, well, just, you know, overall as a leadoff hitter this season in 36 games, batting 309 with a 912 OPS. So it's like some people really get it. Some players really get a charge out of being the leadoff hitter, right?
Yeah, they're the spark plug. And, yeah. And what better spark plug for this team than Francisco Lindor, right? They've got other guys who can hit third and fourth, right? JD Martinez, Pete Alonso, let those guys do that stuff.
Yeah.
I like, you know, Lindor was a guy who, you know, we maybe recalibrated a few expectations for him because last year he had that 31 home run, 31 stolen base season, you know, career high in steals and all that stuff. Now, I do think he's going to steal like 25 bases, and I think that he's going to hit like 25 home runs. I think he's going to keep hitting 250, if not better, rest of season, because he's a little bit streaky, right? But yeah, obviously, you know, Lindor doing well. It's also nice to
see. It's also the Brandon. Grimace. The Grimace has helped, right? Ever since he threw out that first pitch. Has that made national, not news, but.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, it's everywhere.
Okay. It's everywhere. Okay. Everywhere. I just want to make sure it wasn't a local thing. Are you a McDonald's or do you eat any, by the way, are you do you indulge everyone?
I live a mile from a McDonald's. And that was part of the selling point of this home. I don't have to turn except for in and out of my driveway and into theirs. Right. Like it's.
So that's your number one fast food place, we'll say, or no?
I mean, I do like Wendy's. Fresh ground beef tastes better in frozen. If you ever wonder why a place has really, really good burgers, even the plain ones, it's because they use fresh beef.
Right, right.
Like that's like you might not realize it because I never did. And I would get, you know, I was like, it doesn't matter what meat I get. No, it does. Local's great, all that stuff. But just even if you can just get meat that's never been frozen.
Right, like right. Fresh that was one of the things that McDonald's started doing with their quarter pounder, right? That quarter pounder, they said, look, we're not going to freeze it. It's and you know, I'm not a big fast food guy, but, you know, here and there I'll indulge. And I have noticed that over the past couple of years, the quarter pounder has gotten a lot better. It's a lot juicier. And I think that they changed I don't know why they would only do it with that one sandwich, but whatever. I mean, but hey, Grimace is really healthy.
And we'll ignore all the other dollar value meal stuff that McDonald's got going on. But right. I'll say this. It's really nice to see the Met. Like when teams are hot, everything works.
Yeah.
All right. Moving guys in the lineup works. Because guess they made two real moves in that lineup. And the other one is that they moved Nemo to second. And since then he's hitting 333 and slugging 667.
Yep.
Right. He's been looking great. So again, when your team is hot, everything works. So it's nice to see that for the Mets. I mean, there's going to be some up and downs, but you know, both those guys should continue to be solid. Kelenic is the one who, you know, if you had any trepidation about Kelenic, it was that, you know, maybe they won't lead him off against lefties, right? He was splitting that job a little bit before when he's had it. But, you know, this week they saw three or four lefties and Kelenic led off against every single one of them.
And I don't even see why they wouldn't even think about that. I mean, his numbers are even against right and left-handed pitching.
Yeah, but, you know, teams, the thing is.
Analytics, baby.
Yeah. Well, and it's about lefties specifically, and it's less about the player and more about the other player, the guy they would platoon him with. It is easy in this league to find righties who can hit lefties. Right. There are lots of righties in this league who, you know, become pinch hitters because they can really, they see the ball really well coming out of the other side. Right.
And so, just let me take it aside. I know that I said his numbers are pretty even, but his slug is like almost 100 points higher as right versus right-handed pitching. So I'll grant him that.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, again, it's less about Kelenic not being able to handle lefties and more about them possibly having a guy who handles lefties really well. So like that was the idea with like a Michael Harris, right? They're like, well, this guy has more upside against lefties. That's what it's about. It's about Harris, not about Kelenic. So anyway, Kelenic, he's locked in the leadoff spot. Look, I don't know what it's going to look like in the future, right? Like, I was actually fairly surprised they chose Kelenic to be the leadoff guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he doesn't walk hardly at all. He strikes out quite a bit. Like, you know, since moving to the leadoff spot, it hasn't changed all that much.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, how often he strikes out, it's still, you know, I want to say it's north of 25. It's around 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Still walks below league average. But you know what? He hits home runs. He's got, you know, he's got five of them since becoming the leadoff guy. And it, again, when sometimes when you're right, you're right. And it just works. Again, not necessarily someone who I think will lead off for all of his career. Yeah, he's striking out 23.8% of the time since moving into this spot. That's before Sunday's game. And I know he's got at least one strikeout already today. So he's going to kind of hover around there. But yeah, this is a guy who you should be hoping stays locked into your lineup all season long. This is a guy who it's power that he really brings to the table. Speed, he's got a bit of. He really hasn't been running that much since becoming the leadoff guy. I want to say he has two steals since being given this role. But yeah, Kelenic locked in starter.
Only has three all season too. So he really wasn't running all season long.
Yeah. He wasn't running at all before then. And now he's running a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I think about long-term projection, like what can Kelenic be? I think at one time there was huge, huge upside. I think now he's still got a lot of it, but because of that, you know, that approach is still pretty aggressive. He's not weak against lefties, but he's prone to slumps with that aggressive approach. I would say Kelenic is a guy who next season, I think the rosy projection, if he can keep doing something like what he's doing now, be like a 25 home run, 10 to 15 stolen base guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good player.
Yep.
Right. It's not the superstar we hoped, but it's a very good player.
All right. I think that slams the lid on things for this week, Scott. I think that maybe McDonald's should, give us a free burger or something, or sponsor this episode or whatnot. Because
don't hate on the Filet-O-Fish. That steamed bun makes a difference.
You know, I haven't had one of those in a long time. Is that another one of your favorites? Do you like that?
Oh, it's the only sandwich where they steam the bun. And I'm telling you, makes a difference.
I might have to try that. Okay. I mean, you're probably just about the right age. Do you remember those McDonaldland cartoon movies that they used to have? Used to be coming
out? Oh yeah. The play places were huge when I was a kid. Right. I can't tell you how many germs I picked up there with my fellow kids.
Yeah.
You know, more than once I encountered vomit in the ball pit.
Oh.
Right? Kids just love throwing up in the damn ball pit.
Oh jeez. Okay. I used to love watching those cartoons with my kids too. The McDonaldland cartoons, but now McDonald's has gotten away from McDonaldland, except for the Grimace. I don't know, but everyone's afraid of clowns. So I guess that's why Ronald McDonald isn't around anymore.
Well, he's objectively terrifying to look at.
Come on. It's a clown. Yeah, I recently went within the past 6 months, Ringling came back, Ringling Brothers, and they don't call it a circus anymore, but there's no clowns. So I guess clowns could be terrifying, I guess. But there you go. So like I said, that'll slam the lid on things for this week. We're heading over to July 4th. So that's a good checkpoint for you to take a look at your team, make some moves. We'll talk about that in our next episode. But follow my man Scott Chu at If the Chu Fits. Check out his Wednesday article that comes out, the hitter list, top 150 hitters. Check out his Reddit AMA. And I just want to do a special shout out. So when I commute to work, if I haven't had a chance to check out box scores, you really got to check out the First Pitch podcast. Casey Bubba does the one through Monday through Friday. I think it was Jake Crumpler does the weekend one, but really, really good stuff. So I know Scott used to host that at one point for a little while, right? So that's a really great resource. So kudos to those guys for doing that. And you can follow me.
Oh, it's much better since they dumped me. Like, they really found some quality.
I mean, that's the thing. When are you recording that? In the middle of the night, right? I mean, it's like, because you have to wait for all the games.
Mine was always late. That's why I don't do it anymore. Mine was hours late. Hours. Yeah.
All right. So follow me on X at Joe Galita. Follow this man on X at If the Chu Fits. And like we always say, we hope that all your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.